Before we start this week, we've got a really big announcement, don't we, guys?
Yes, we do.
We are launching a Patreon.
Woo!
Woo!
There's a load of costs involved in making a podcast. Corey has to read lots of science. Sometimes that science is behind paywalls because those nasty institutions want to make money with the science.
Pay for your information.
James has to pay to host the podcast on the internet.
Yes, I do.
I also sometimes spend money on things.
You do?
Not to do with the podcast. You just like spending money.
You like spending money on balloons and... Oh no, the nettles were free, weren't they?
The nettles were free, and also the balloons were bought by Rachel at her birthday party. So,
bargain.
Unfortunately, I can't claim that back.
If you do enjoy listening to the podcast, it would be a big help if you chipped in anything you could, anything you wouldn't miss from your pocket every month. That would be lovely.
Support the show, show your appreciation, and feel slightly less guilty every time you listen to it for free.
So you can find us at patreon.com/SciGuys. That's patreon.com/SciGuys.
Patreon.com.
Patreon.com.
/SciGuys.
All right, start the show.
Hello and welcome to the Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the...
I'm so sorry.
It's like you couldn't hold it in.
Hello and welcome to the Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jeb and Luke Cutler.
Hello.
Hello.
This week we'll be talking about railway spikes and accidental brain surgery.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Phineas Gage.
Okay.
Phineas Gage. Yeah. We teased him a little bit before, but now we're actually going to get into him, like that railway spike.
Have you been starting writing jokes in your notes there, Corey?
No, that just came to me.
Okay.
Much like the railway spike came to his brain.
That was the same joke, but it wasn't as good.
Just do it again and again until people are tired of you. Phineas Gage was a railway worker whose horrific accident marked a turning point in our understanding of the brain. I'm just going to be walking you through his life and subsequent death.
Hell yeah, I love this story.
It's a really good story.
It's really good.
Do you guys know a lot about him?
I know the general gist of him.
He became a dickhead.
that's the ending. Well, I guess it's kind
spoilers. Became a dickhead.
It's kind of the middle, isn't it?
It's to be honest, it's most of it.
It's most of his
most
life.
Most of it, yeah.
Most of his life, yeah.
So Phineas Gage was, as I said, a railway worker. He was born in July on...
Of this year.
On Earth.
On Earth, in New Hampshire. Trying to read out this year, 1823. Forgot I had to read numbers for a second.
It happens.
That's nearly 200 years ago.
Ah, so it is. Oh, yeah.
Happy birthday.
No.
4 years.
Not at all. Not even the right part
happy
of the year.
Happy birthday in 4 years. The birthday's every year, James.
Happy 200th
Happy
birthday.
Centenary in 4 years.
Yeah. Does he get another letter from the Queen?
He's dead, man. I don't think he has an address.
He's also American, so...
Yeah, true.
Hang on. The letters from the Queen, they're a telegram, are they not? Do they still come as a telegram?
I mean,
I know that they...
Who would they go to?
Well, I don't know. Is there a telegram office somewhere?
I haven't got mine yet.
The Queen is sending out telegrams to everyone in the UK. Just no one has the capacity to receive it. Anyway, back to Phineas Gage. Not much is actually known about his upbringing and education beyond the fact that he could read.
Congratulations, man. Was being able to read, unusual 200 years ago?
I mean, in the 1800s, not everyone was, you know... going through school.
All right, so it's an achievement. Well done, Phineas.
Yeah, I mean, you went to school, you know. And then he became a railway worker, where you don't really need to read, which is
kind
of a waste. So his town doctor, John Martin Harlow, described him as a perfectly healthy, strong and active young man, 25 years of age, with nervo-bilious temperament. He was 5'6" and average weight of 150 pounds, and had an iron will as well as an iron frame, muscular system unusually well-developed, having had scarcely a day's illness from his childhood to the date of his injury.
Nervo bilious mean?
That's what I was going to ask.
I'm glad you asked, because this is very important. Have you heard of phrenology?
Phrenology.
I've heard of it.
PH phrenology. No?
I've heard of it, yeah.
Okay, phrenology is the... It's the idea that the size of someone's skull can tell you what kind of person they are.
Oh, yeah.
Can it?
No. It was phrenology is basically racism, but dressed up to be science.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So nerval bilious just means that he's excitable with active mental powers. Basically, Gage was a good-looking, strong 25-year-old, and he was good-looking.
Like me.
Oh, well,
oh yeah.
I don't know. He was about a...
Move on before you insult me. Shut up.
Oh, no, I've not seen a picture of Phineas.
He's definitely about an 8, I would say.
Who, me or Phineas Gage?
Phineas Gage. Gage. Have you seen a picture of him? Do you want me to show you a picture?
Yeah, please.
I'm about to see 8 pictures of him.
There he is.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Ooh. Oh, this is after he's had the accident.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
I thought he was just winking at me.
He looks No.
He's handsome. He could play like Superman if he was alive.
He looks a bit like Dexter.
He does. Doesn't he? Wow.
He's got a really kind of, he's got like that thin, that kind of thin but strong face.
Like chiseled.
Yeah.
Very chiseled.
He's a good looking guy. Looks kind of tired.
And he's permanently winking.
Women love him.
Flirting.
Wow. Ooh, he winked at me.
Are you flirting
with me? He winked at everybody.
No, actually, I had a large rod drive itself through my skull when I was working on a train line.
I'm actually missing my eye, part of my brain.
So yeah, he was a looker. So as I said, he worked on the construction of the Hudson River Railroad in New York. And by the time of his accident, he was the blasting foreman. Apparently, he could have been an independent contractor. So he's basically just Luke, but in the 1800s.
What? Independent? Self-employed?
He's self-employed. Yeah. He's good looking, 25.
Good.
Aww.
Proper entrepreneur.
Wow, the first compliment Corey has ever paid to me.
Yeah, so his employers thought he was most efficient and capable foreman, a shrewd, smart businessman, very energetic, and persistent in executing all his plans of operation.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. So he also got himself commissioned a custom-made tamping iron, which is a big iron rod that you use to tamp down gunpowder. Gunpowder?
Gunpowder.
Gunpowder.
Like when you tamper coffee. When you put coffee into like a thing, you kind of like shove it down with a big...
Yeah, except like explosive.
Yeah,
like explosive coffee.
I don't drink coffee, so it could be explosive for all I know. I don't know. Part of Gage's duties was to just clear rocks from where they wanted to build railroads.
Sure.
Yeah. So that involved placing an explosive charge deep into the rock by drilling a hole and then filling the hole with gunpowder and setting a fuse.
Oh, that's a lot more. I thought you meant like just picking up rocks.
Picking up rocks and moving them out of the way.
And you were like, no, he blew them up.
No, of course he blew them up. Yeah, how else would he get a railroad spike through his head?
Fun on the job.
Well, I don't know, man. You're telling the story.
Pick up a rock so wrong, you get a railroad spike. That's why you need all of those sites tell you to pick stuff up when you're working. I just realized neither of you have really worked in pubs, have you?
I worked one day in a pub.
No, you didn't work. No.
I worked one day in a pub.
You did not work one day in a pub.
James worked in a pub, yeah.
Okay, good. Good. Yeah. Well, look.
I worked one day in a pub. I did.
No, you got to play work one day in a pub.
I was in a pub.
You got sponsored.
I was in a pub for a day. That's, yes.
For 4 hours.
I was in a pub for some time inside of a day.
So sand was added on top of the explosive material to prevent contact between the tamping stuff.
Yep.
The tamping stuff? The tamping iron and the gunpowder.
Because otherwise it would blow up.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. So then you would tamp it down with the tamping rod and you pack the explosives into the rock. Then you set the fuse, rock goes boom, no more rock. So about 4:30 in the afternoon on September 13th in 1848, in Vermont, Gage tamped down the powder without adding in the sand.
Oh, silly boy.
Yeah.
Silly.
Okay, well, smart. I'm kind of like a little bit relieved that at least this was his fault. Like,
well, it's not like someone else screwed up.
It's not like someone screwed up and he messed up his whole head. He made a mistake.
But he was still good looking. He was probably still one of, and remember, this was...
And as we all know, bad things don't... good looking people don't deserve to have bad things happen to them.
No, I mean, as in... He messed up his whole head, but he still looked good.
Yeah, and that's impressive. That's
1848, when people were ugly. So
what, Gary?
I don't know. It wasn't there.
If you look at pictures from the 1800s, they're malnourished and
don't
have any skin care routines.
To be fair, he was a sexy man.
Yeah, so, he really was.
Yeah,
sexy man. So while he was looking over his right shoulder and apparently inadvertently bringing his head into line with the blast hole, he opened his mouth to speak.
Oh, no.
And at the same time, apparently, the iron rod sparked and lit the gunpowder. And it exploded. So effectively, you know how a gun works.
Yes, it was, well, exactly
old
like
guns.
That.
It's exactly that.
But the bullet was a spike.
The bullet was a giant metal about pole. A meter long spike, which was about 3.2 centimeters in diameter.
That is a crazy thing thick. To like so, survive.
It's like one and a half inches ish.
Yeah, so it's about 1.25 inches.
Ooh.
Yeah, but it tapered down to about.
That's like
0.6.
The length of my little finger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it tapered down to about 0.6 centimeters over the length of it.
I see.
So there was no actual spike. Like, there wasn't actually a very sharp spike. It was still quite a blunt object.
It was about the width of your, probably about the width of your pinky.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. Like to have that go through your head.
Yeah.
Because of the force, because it's not coming to a point like it would do if it was like an arrow. Mm. It's just like banged its way into his head.
Burst through.
That's horrible.
It was coming with, that's the thing, it was coming out with such force that it went straight through his head and landed about 25 meters behind him.
Yeah.
It went
clean through.
It was not stuck in. That thing was through and gone.
I remember it being in psychology in school and they showed like an animated reenactment of how it would have looked going through and then into the air and then landing ages away.
Imagine talking to a guy. You're working on the railroads, doing your job, talking to a guy, and then suddenly there's a railroad spike that's gone through his head, landing at your feet. Because it was covered with
chunks of brain, right?
Yeah, with blood and brain stuff.
Yummy.
Yeah. Just all along it.
But inevitably we discovered some amazing things because of this. So thank you for your service.
Maybe more people should be putting railroad spikes through their brains.
No, we've discovered what we need to do for this. Just people should just mess up. Sometimes, and then we will discover
when people mess up, we should use it for knowledge.
Yes,
we do that quite a lot.
I'm not calling everyone to just mess up all the time.
you should mess up more.
Science is just messing up and writing it down,
yeah,
and doing it better next time. That's a key part. You can't do the same thing over and over.
I had this great description of what science is in many cases, or at least a lot of the breakthroughs, which is that the breakthroughs of science, according to this quote, occur in like states of like you're drunk or you're on a drug or you're just like super excited and just like thinking about stuff, or like a eureka moment, and then they spend the rest of their careers trying to legitimize where they got the idea from and how it came from earlier science.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I just love that. Yeah. I love that as an idea, because it's just such a strange thing, because we are like, we then have to go and go, right, and this is justified by this and this and this. Mm. And really, it was just this moment where they went, whoa!
Oh,
exactly, yeah.
What if?
The figuring it out always, pretty much always comes after. Like, we were talking about once graphene and how we made one of the best substances on the planet.
Sure.
Completely from accidentally using using tape and carbon.
Yeah.
Or blue tack.
Yeah.
Made by accident. LSD, made by accident.
Sticky notes, made by accident.
There you go, yeah.
Loads of great stuff.
Luke, made by accident.
I don't actually think that's true, but thank you for the joke anyway.
It was a compliment.
I think you're intentional.
Thank you, James. Thanks a lot. I would make you intentionally. Well, that's a compliment, I guess.
So back to Gage. The rod entered just below his left cheekbone and exited from the top of his skull.
Ooh.
Sorry,
so a little bit farther back.
Disgusting.
Well, not like right back, but like...
Yeah, like, okay.
Yeah.
Like the 25 degree angle.
I think like, yeah, like that.
Okay.
So he was fine. You'd think he would have passed out, but he didn't.
Did he get up?
Yeah.
Did he just stand up?
So apparently he was fine within about... Yeah, he was... So immediately afterwards, he was conscious and talking.
Yeah.
About 30 minutes later, he spoke to... He spoke to the physician, the doctor, Edward H. Williams.
Pretty impressive that there was a doctor there that quickly in the 1800s. That's
cool. I think there was probably one on site for accidents.
Yes.
Yeah, so apparently he spoke to Edward H. Williams and gave one of the greatest understatements of medical history.
What did he say?
So this is a quote from the doctor. He said, "When I drove up, he said, 'Doctor, here is business enough for you. I first noticed the wound upon the head before I alighted from my carriage, the pulsations of the brain being very distinct. The top of the head appeared somewhat like an inverted funnel, as if some wedge-shaped body had passed from below upwards. Mr. Gage, during the time I was examining this wound, was relating the manner in which he was injured to the bystanders. I did not believe Mr. Gage's statement at that time, but thought he was deceived. Mr. Gage persisted in saying that the bar went through his head. Mr. G got up and vomited. the effort of vomiting pressed out about half a teacup of the brain through the exit hole at the top of the skull.
I didn't know. Okay, I knew that happened. Which fell on the floor. Happened that quickly.
Yeah.
Ah.
That's disgusting.
It just fell on the floor.
Yeah, so when he was talking to the doctor, he puked and a bit more of his brain came out. I knew that. I thought that happened like the next day, though.
No, that was 30 minutes late. Wow. What's really frustrating about that is that I would really hate to see my brain come out when I vomited. Because I could have kept some of that.
That would have made me vomit a bit more.
Yeah, but I would be really annoyed if I threw up and just lost some more brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
That could be anything.
You're losing a chunk of your brain and then you're trying to explain it to the doctor and then more of it comes out as you're talking to him.
Yeah, so as I said, he survived the accident totally fine. He was speaking, talking to the doctor, and about 10 days later, he had a brief period where he was barely conscious, and his doctors thought he was going to die. But he didn't. He quickly recovered, and within a matter of months, he was back at his old physical strength and was able to return to work.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah, he's a pretty hardy guy. So his personality appears to have changed for at least a little bit of time. And some of his colleagues said that he wasn't Gage anymore. He was no longer Gage.
They said he was like a completely different person.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was more aggressive and stuff.
So this is the really key thing about this story was that we then went on to use this as evidence that removing parts of the brain changed personality and changed... Yeah.
So this went on to do a lot of stuff. So
was this at a time when we thought, as the scientific community thought, that like they hadn't quite worked out that everything was stored in the brain personality-wise? They still thought it was like the heart and other parts.
Yeah, like the soul and...
Well, they still believed in phrenology, so I feel like they
didn't
really...
Okay, sure, fine.
Yeah. They thought that parts of the brain had... They thought that parts of the brain had influence on personality, but more in a metaphysical sense rather than rather than the actual brain thinking.
Yeah.
So he became restless, disrespectful, and unreliable after the accident. But because we didn't really record his personality beforehand, couldn't really compare afterwards.
Hard to tell.
Ask his friends.
Well, yeah, they've asked his friends, but still, they're like, yeah, he's not cool anymore. We don't like him.
Yeah.
Used to be so chill and lit. No longer.
His vibes are off.
No longer, fam.
Now he has a hole in his head. And all he does is whine about that. He's so boring now.
We don't vibe with him.
So the Dr. Harlow was basically the only source of information on Gage. So this is... All the information is basically through him. So it's kind of a bit of a biased source, but also there's not much that you can do about it. So as I said, he was hardworking and responsible beforehand, but afterwards he just was not as good a worker as he was before. He was rude. He couldn't focus.
Yeah.
He didn't really care. He knew his friends and family, just didn't really think to be nice to them.
Yeah, well, that's because if he's smashed up his frontal lobe, then he's not going to have any ability to kind of like execute on tasks. I think there's a bit of moderation of emotion there too.
Yeah, exactly. So
response.
Oh yeah. So the frontal lobe of your brain is for, I think, inhibition control.
Yeah.
And emotion, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't have been really too bothered about caring about other people.
No.
Yeah.
No. It's a shame. Oh. But he did well afterwards, to be honest. He had major brain damage, but compared to the accident, fairly minor. He was still fully capable of living his own life.
Mm-hmm.
He lost his jobs with all of the employers that he had before, because the change in his mind was so much that they couldn't employ him. They didn't want to give him the job again.
And he didn't get any kind of compensation for... I mean, I know it was his fault, but like,
it was the
nothing?
1800s.
Oh,
yeah. He didn't.
I don't think so. No.
No. which is kind of a shame. I'll tell you what he went on to do. So I was going to give that later, but I'll just tell you now. Effectively, he was doing bits and pieces for a few years. And then he then he started traveling with his tamping iron throughout New England.
And showing it off.
Yeah. He was like, look, I'm an oddity. And he was making money from that.
So he was running his own little freak show.
Yeah, at Barnum's Circus.
Wow.
P.T. Barnum.
You didn't see that in The Greatest Showman, did you?
No, you didn't.
Just a man with a spike in his face.
But to be fair, anyone with a bit of a facial deformity could just say, hey,
yeah, hey,
this went through my head.
Yeah, but his was true.
Yeah, but no one has any way of knowing that.
But his was true.
Okay, he wasn't lying.
I think he should have left the spike in his face and then gone traveling around like that.
You mean put the spike back in his face?
Yeah.
Because it landed 25 meters away. Yeah.
Put it back in, slide it in. There's probably space.
Look, it's in my head right now.
I've never taken it out, except for when I did, and then I put it back on purpose. Give me your money.
I mean, ultimately, if you could stop him from dying of an infection,
yeah,
he would have been fine, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pour some vodka on it every now and again.
Ow!
Yeah. I just realized how much that would hurt.
Imagine how drunk you'd get straight away.
Oh, yeah.
To replace your cerebral spinal fluid with pure vodka.
Absolutely hammered instantly.
In vodka.
In 1852, he took a job in Chile. Working as a stagecoach driver. So they let him drive a car.
With no inhibitions and no emotional control.
I mean, he does obviously have that, just
not a lot.
Not the same as before.
Yeah.
So apparently he had maintained or regained some social skills. So he's effectively a cabbie. A taxi driver.
Like a taxi driver.
Sure.
Which needs a fair amount of social skills.
Yes.
Yeah.
So was he kind of like relearning?
Apparently, it's not well documented. Yeah. So we know that either he maintained it or relearned it.
Yeah.
But either way, there's the capacity to still have social skills.
Yeah.
I'm guessing we didn't have any at this point in time. There was no idea of like brain plasticity. Plasticity?
Not a clue. They had no idea. They didn't even, that's the next point. They had no idea about brain localization.
Yeah.
So, just to explain, brain localization effectively means that different parts of your brain are responsible for different things.
Different. Yeah.
So there's one part of your brain at the back, down in the base, that's responsible for all your sort of breathing and all the things that you don't think about.
Yeah. Like subconscious.
Subconscious stuff that just happens in the background. There's other parts that are to do with emotion, some parts to do with memory, and they all kind of link into each other. Obviously, you've got different connections.
They talk to each other, yeah.
Yeah, but
they're
all
responsible for their own thing.
Yeah. And brain plasticity is the idea that if you lose a part of your brain, the rest of your brain can kind of rewire itself to work without it.
Yeah. Pick up the slack.
And it does it amazingly if you're a baby.
Oh, babies are so good. You could give brain damage to a baby and you wouldn't necessarily know when they grew up.
Yeah. I think I've said this before on the podcast, but there are babies where they have a specific illness that means they have to have half the brain removed, like a whole...
I was just thinking about this, but I couldn't remember the name. Removed. Yeah.
And then the remaining half of the brain takes over and does the full brain. And that's just incredible. So
does
clever.
Everything.
Ultimately, it's insane. Because we think of our brain as being the center for everything and brain damage as being like an end all.
Yeah.
But it's really not.
So is this the experiment where they started to think about brain localization? Is that why this is significant?
Yes. This is the start of brain localization, the start of the idea of brain surgery. Unfortunately, the route for lobotomies as well.
Sure.
So yeah, like we were talking about, that was in the 19th century, and there were massive debates over whether localization was a thing. But Harlow, one of the doctors that I spoke about originally, published a paper in 1868, which was one of the first to really say this is what's actually going on.
Yeah.
And kind of have proof behind it. So it was a really massive step, despite the fact that, you know, it kind of ruined his life. It was a massive step forward for science. Yeah.
So that was like 15, 20 years after it happened, though.
Yeah.
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 I mean, a bit of time.
There were further studies. There were further studies. Yeah. So phrenologists, as I was talking about before, phrenologists didn't really agree with that. They thought the brain was made up of different mental organs, if that makes sense.
Is that not the same thing?
Not really.
Okay.
Yeah. So they... Because
I would say that us saying like prefrontal lobe and then like frontal lobe and hippocampus and things, those are kind of like essentially brain organs-ish. They're not, but you know what I mean? They're separate entities that do tasks separate to each other and then share the data.
I mean, the thing is, with phrenology, there's a lot wrong with it, but they were kind of right.
On a couple of bits.
Yeah, so they were saying that there are parts of your brain that are for this, but they thought about it in kind of the wrong way, as in they thought there was an organ that was related to religion and God.
Well, I mean, there'll be parts of the brain that are susceptible to the meme religion and God.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
And they would measure people's heads.
Usually the fear response section.
Yeah. But they would love measure people's skulls to decide whether they were good people or not.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, they are stupid.
That's guess, a bitch.
Guess what kind of people had bad-shaped skulls?
Women?
No.
What I'm guessing not white people.
Not white people.
Oh, yay! Oh, bloody hell. I hate people so much.
Which is why you've probably seen this recently. They've got an AI thing that's, I think it's to do with passports now, where they're kind of measuring people's faces and their facial structure and determining whether they're more likely to commit crimes or not.
Oh, that's what? So bad.
What?
That's so bad. Because that will inevitably, like, just from
just
the distribution of money in the world, that will create a false positive of, well, people who are committing crimes are people who have, we know, people who have less money. Well, that's not true. Rich people commit a lot of crimes that rich people commit, but the crimes like theft and things like that, more overt crimes are caused by
petty crimes
by poor people, and black people are disproportionately poor, and it's going to create this horrible false positive where it goes, oh, look at all these fake.
This is the whole issue with AI policing. They've actually got it in place in a lot of places.
It just inevitably becomes racist.
Yeah. But they've got these AI policing, this AI policing software where they'll send more officers to areas with higher crime. And they end up just sending more officers to area with more black people.
Yeah.
Because there's more reported crime there, and it just feeds into itself. Basically, the idea is that if you've got AI or any kind of like learning software, you need to remember that you're teaching it to be racist. Just by living in this world, you're teaching it to think bad things, so you need to be careful.
It's only as good as the data set you give it, and if your data set is skewed by inequality, then it's
of course, yeah.
What you could do, I suppose, is if you as a conscious person could go, okay, we know that race does not determine anything to do with crime rates or intelligence or anything like that. You could give it in your training data, you could control for that, and you could get a cross section of criminals, like 500 criminals, and ensure that certain protected groups like race and gender are controlled for, and then it might be able to do a little bit of training on things, for example, like the way that someone carries their face would suggest more anger or suggest more like fear response in terms of like they're worried that they've done something to someone, so someone's going to come get them. And that could be, if you control for all the variables that we know are not correct, then you could make an interesting algorithm.
But the issue is that people need to actually think to do that.
Yeah.
And no one wants to do
that. And you also don't know all the stuff that you don't know yet.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, because hundreds of years ago, people will have looked at the world and they will have thought it was entirely logical that people who were black who were committing more crime, because they weren't smart enough yet to realize their own...
Because it seems so straightforward.
No, to be fair, a lot of crimes were made to
criminalize black people. Yes, yeah, yeah. Also that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The issue is...
Oh,
that
God, I hate the world.
Any data set you give it is going to be messed up. So remember this, there was this kind of AI chatbot.
Right.
I think it was someone that was tweeting, this little girl or something.
Oh, Evie.
Evie, that was it. Yeah. It was based on...
Evie's really
Was
racist.
This the Microsoft one?
Yeah, that was a Nazi within a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just learned, basically it learned what people tweet by looking at Twitter. And then because people were tweeting a bunch of racist and Nazi stuff, it was just then started tweeting racist, really, Nazi stuff.
Yeah.
Because it was just given the training data of the internet, and the internet's full of racist stuff.
But this was years ago, and still Twitter allows Nazis online.
It's just so scary, isn't it?
Let's get back.
Oh, we're talking about Phineas Gage, aren't we?
Let's get back to psychosurgery and lobotomy. So basically, people are always saying that what happened to Gage was 100% the basis for lobotomies. And while the idea of, you know, different parts of your brain being responsible for different things was the basis for lobotomies, they didn't do it to copy Gage, obviously.
Because he turned out worse.
Well, he didn't turn out worse. He turned out very different. More antisocial. He was...
Yeah, I'd say that's worse, Corey. It's not like people were like, wow, you're so much better now, you don't have part of your head.
Okay, fair enough. I just mean he wasn't a criminal.
Sure, yeah.
I like the new you.
In respect to
what she would have got hit with a spike years ago.
New Year's resolutions was part of my brain.
In respect to what a lobotomy is supposed to do, he didn't come off much worse. There's no evidence that any of those operations were designed deliberately to have the same kinds of changes that Gage had.
I think it's just something where, like, we can look back at lobotomy and we can be like, obviously that was awful. But if you ran the universe again, you ran simulation of the universe again, and at some point in time we discovered the brain was the center of emotion, then we're going to start trying to pull stuff out of it. Like, it's not, it's always was going to happen.
I think the issue is that we decide that we know everything. So let's just fix people now.
You sound like me, Corey.
Yeah.
We don't know anything. We're stupid.
Well, when it comes to the brain, we really don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but another great thing that Phineas Gage's situation really showed us was the fact that you could operate on the brain without people dying, which is nice, which means you can get rid of tumors.
Yeah, true.
Which is fantastic. So, as I said, Gage traveled around New England with his iron. He worked at Barnum's Circus, and he took a job in Chile as a stagecoach driver.
He's a real entrepreneur, isn't he? He didn't lose that.
Well, in 1859, he moved back to California to live with his mother and sister, who had moved there from New Hampshire. And nearly 12 years after his injury, he died of epileptic seizures. But his skull and the iron tamping rod were put on permanent exhibition at Harvard Medical School's Warren Anatomical Museum in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Nice.
Which is really nice. So you can probably go see his head today.
His head.
His skull. Head.
Wow. That's so exciting.
Which is really cool because you get to see the actual hole that it made.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
Should we go?
Let's go.
Let's get a side guy's selfie.
That's the Patreon. That's what the Patreon is for, guys.
That's our goal.
Yeah. But that's the story of Phineas Gage.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Medical marvel. Thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at Jemkin everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.